You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
In Gotham, things are getting a little chilly as sides are taken and favors are traded. Sci-Fi for Chicks will talk about it in this episode, As Cold as Ice.
Hey, there you are. Oh, dude,
I feel like I heard a cattle at a dance party in my head last night. What's up?
Why the hell would you lie to exonerate Flash? Don't deny it, I saw the tape.
I'm not denying anything. I did what I had to do. If I didn't do what Loeb told me to do, I would have lost my job. Probably gone to prison.
What does he have on you? Harvey.
Do you honestly think you're the only one who had the orders to take a punk down to the end of a pier and put a bolt in his head? Huh? The difference is, my cobblepot didn't come back.
Who'd you kill?
Scumbag, mobster. Caught him coming out of a club one night. My sergeant put a gun in my hand, held another to my head, and said, make a choice. I decided to keep breathing.
Damn it, Harvey.
So what? What are you going to do? Arrest me? Go ahead, arrest me, but don't stop there. Half the cops on the GCPD have a cobblepot, and Loeb has the goods on all of them. That is what Loeb does.
Well, it ends now.
Jim, hey, going after Flash was bad enough. Going after Loeb is suicide, plain and simple.
So what? I'm supposed to stay quiet, fall in line like the rest of you?
That would be a good idea.
The day I do that is the day I quit being a cop.
Hi, and welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. My name is Heather, and I am joined, as always, thankfully, by my podcasting partner in crime, Alex. Hello, Alex.
Hello, hello, hello.
We are here to talk about Gotham Season 1, Episode 18, Everyone Has a Cobblepot. I called it As Cold as Ice because there kept being those moments that reminded me of that song where, you know, they're willing to sacrifice things and one day you'll pay. And it just, everybody was making these deals and trades and compromises that I think might actually lead to some interesting things when we come back. We do have a break, so you will not be hearing Chicks Talk Gotham for a few weeks because it won't be back until April 13th. So I guess this is a late season break. It's not a mid season, late season. It's a spring break of their own. I don't know.
Everything happens on their own time when it comes to Gotham. You know how they had
that's true.
Decided to put one thing as the mid season finale, but it ended up not being as great as some other episodes. So yeah. They're doing things their own way, and we almost never agree with them. But hey, you know, like my mother said, as long as you're happy. So writers, just this once, as long as you're happy, do whatever, and we'll see.
Which leads me to a question. Last week, we really liked last week's episode. It was, I thought, one of the best ones of the season, Red Hood. Were you happy with this episode?
I was okay with it. There were parts I liked. There were parts I really liked. And there were parts I was eh about. So, you know, it was okay. But, hey, I've seen they can do better.
I really liked it, but I find it interesting that you've divided it into things you liked, you really liked, and things you went eh. And we really only have three main areas of this story. Sometimes we break down the discussion and it's like, my gosh, how many different groups of people and stories did they talk about? I think we've had up to six.
Yeah.
In one episode. I'm like, God, that's kind of tiring. This really was a lot more compact because we only have three different segments. Now, last week I convinced Alex to start with Fish and end with Bruce. We're going to flip it this week, and we're going to start where we ended last week with a little bit of Bruce and Alfred, and we have little sneak peeks there from Jim and Kat. We start with Bruce bedside, and Alfred is awake, and it's the next morning. What? I thought he was on his deathbed. I thought Reggie really took him down.
I was ready for him to be in a coma for like two episodes at least.
Exactly. Especially with a break like this.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining he's not in a coma. But that's what I was expecting from, you know, the intensity of last week. And the, oh my god, they almost killed Alfred. And here he is, you know, talking, almost walking. That's later, but...
I was expecting him to, like, you know, start eating Jell-O, flirt with the nurses. I mean, he didn't seem that bad off when Jim walks in, which I'm glad Jim came in. And I like how Bruce even stood up to greet him, you know, doing this whole formal thing. Yeah, I was expecting, it was just three guys hanging out. It was kind of, I guess maybe we should go to the hospitals in Gotham. So we'll talk about this more later when I have a mini rant. But everybody seems to heal remarkably fast in Gotham as long as they don't die.
Yeah, it's either you die or you get well pretty fast.
Exactly.
And that's not a bad, you know, trade-off. I mean, it's almost like with becoming a werewolf. You either become a werewolf or you die.
Yeah, it was a little off there, but at least we did see him almost as he's struggling to get up and leave, and Bruce orders him back down. Okay, he wasn't exactly 100%. Again, see rant later. So at least there was a little bit of something there. What did you think about Alfred not wanting Bruce to let Jim on who stabbed him? You don't set coppers on your mate, as he said.
I had mixed feelings about it, as you can probably tell by the noises I just made. I don't know what that was.
Was this the meh storyline for you?
Yes, one of the parts. Cause
okay.
Here's the thing. I get that Alfred wasn't always the warmest towards Jim, and then that he doesn't really trust people all that easily or something, but at the same time I'm thinking, really, Alfred? And what you gonna do? You gonna go and die all over Reggie? Because he's not exactly in a position to defend himself if and when he tries to talk to his mate and explain things. I'm sorry, how do you feel it's going to go, Alfred? It's like he got stabbed and half of his logical brain died. So I don't know what he as a character was trying to achieve here. Not only that,
right.
I don't exactly think it's the right thing to say to Bruce. The kid's already messed up.
That's true.
And Jim is the one person Bruce trusts. He's surrounded by people he doesn't trust. He only has Alfred and Jim. And what, Alfred is going to suggest, yeah, maybe we shouldn't trust Jim. I get mixed signals and it confuses me, so I don't really understand what Alfred was trying to do.
The thing I didn't like about it was we've had this, and everybody in fandom, of any kind of fandom, has this thing. It's like, talk to each other.
Yes.
Share. It makes it so much better for everybody. That really kind of threw me off. It's like, I get you're trying to protect him and keep it in, and maybe you have this vendetta because he's your mate, and so you want to take care of him. But somehow keeping Jim in the... I mean, I don't know. It seems like Jim's now at this point where it's not like you have to tell him everything. Yeah, we know who it is, but we want to, you know, I don't want to tell right now because of blah, blah, you know, whatever situation.
Because of reasons.
At least, yeah, I mean, Jim's already, you know, been trying to find mysterious people that killed his parents. Let's not have Jim thinking he has another mysterious person to go find. He's already had a hard enough time finding Kat, who has no problem finding Bruce. Cause I guess her and Ivy are sneaking in to steal food. I'm glad she got the apple. And not the Jell-O. I liked this moment when Kat comes upon him. And by the way, Bruce was reading from Great Expectations. So I'm with Kat. It's like, yeah, that's a happy tales there.
Yeah.
To be reading by somebody's bedside. I like that she just does that little look over there and just goes and hugs him. A little canoeing moment. We had our canoe.
And that was nice. I liked it.
Well, and the way she did it, I think something in Bruce is like, wait a second, I can still trust you. So I think we also have her in his circle of trust, that he knows he can trust her. And I think he doesn't, even if he still thinks she didn't see the face, it doesn't matter to him anymore.
Yeah.
He knows, you know, where she is and what she's at. And that's when we do see, though, that Bruce says that he knows it's the board. I'm so glad Bruce knows.
He's a smart kid. Come on.
Yeah.
He might be messed up and not only a little, a lot, but he's a smart kid. So I'm also glad that he connected the dots and he didn't think that the thing with Red stabbing of Alfred was some random crazy moment or something. So I liked that. But at the same time, I'm still a little, I have a problem with Alfred, so I'll refrain from commenting on his behavior in this episode. Let's just say he's in a doghouse.
Well, okay. We will. I think they did at least nicely set up. I don't know if this is just the next morning. How did Bruce find out that there's some files missing? Haven't you been worried about Alfred? Haven't you been by his bedside this whole time? Should have been a couple days later, something. I don't know. I do like, though, that she's ready to help, though. You know, let me help you. I know how. I'll help.
Yeah.
Even though Bruce says no. So she's wanting to be a part of the Scooby Gang on this one. She did say, you know how to find me.
Yeah,
really?
I don't know.
Does anybody?
How she can think that, since, you know, she's probably more difficult to find than, I don't know, Jimmy Hoffa. I'm just saying, it's like finding her is impossible.
Yes, she's a cat. She only surfaces when she wants to be seen. Anybody that has dealings with a cat knows this to be true. Do you think this is a good setup, what we have here with Bruce and Alfred and such, for these final four episodes that we now have to wait 6 weeks for?
I don't know. That depends on how big of a time jump there's going to be between this episode and the next one. Because
right,
if Alfred's still bedridden, incapable of moving, then it might be a good setup. Because Bruce will have to trust somebody who's not Alfred to stay safe. Because I don't believe that the board is going to wait to make a move until Alfred's there to protect the kid.
True.
So,
true.
Depending on how they handle it, we'll see. You know I'm skeptical when it comes to Gotham writers.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. I'm cautiously optimistic, though.
That's actually a good point, because the last time when we had the mid-season break, they actually acknowledged that there was time passage. So it didn't pick up right when the mid-season finale ended. It picked up that 4 weeks later. So yeah, that is interesting, because of all of the storylines I think that we're going to be talking about in this episode, you're absolutely right. This is the one. Bruce and the board is the one that is least likely to be put on the back burner for a few weeks. The board would want
exactly
to take action.
Exactly.
We'll see. Well, let's go ahead and move on to what I would say is definitely the A story. I think they maybe kind of finally figured out how to do an A story, at least for an episode.
They got the memo.
They got the memo, finally, and did an A story, and it's the whole Jim and Bullock and Dent and Commissioner Loeb. We start with them finding out that Floss guy, who's a cop that they put away for murder, is suddenly off. And this is how we get Harvey Dent back into the mix there.
And I liked the way they did it. I'm going to admit it.
What?
I liked the way they played it, mostly because finally he showed up for a reason. It wasn't like, ooh, shiny new character, shiny, 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 shiny. No, there was a plot and he was actually there for a reason. And why he was the one who went with Jim to the, you know, Asian
Shen Lu,
whoever he was. I have no idea who he was. A bookie, I think?
Yeah, something like that. Doesn't matter. Yeah.
The gangster, who isn't any of the ones that we like. And there was a reason why Jim didn't take Bullock. And I liked when the writers give me reasons. You know? So, plus, you know, Harvey Dent isn't exactly hard on the ice, so I enjoy him.
Wow. I haven't even taken that much cold medicine. I can't attribute that. I was so ready for you to not be on board with how they brought Dent back. And I've got to remember to call him Dent and Bullock because they're both Harveys. And so it's so confusing. Why did we have to write two Harveys? Why do they have to have them both as Harveys?
Every time I start saying Harvey, I need to stop for a second and remind myself, which Harvey am I talking about? Because I also have Harvey Specter from Suits, and I just finished reading a fanfic, so I'm twice as confused. A life of a fan.
With what you said, I actually like how they brought him back now more after what you said, because you're right, it does make sense that as he's prosecuting this Floss guy, that suddenly there's evidence and I can't prosecute. And so it does make sense. Okay, I like it a little bit more now that you've put that up there. I did notice throughout this episode, they really do, now Gotham is a dark series anyway, in its lighting and tries to be moody, but I do notice that a lot of times on Dent, they light him very much where half of him is beautifully brilliantly white and bright and shiny, and the other half is in deep, dark shadows. I think the DP is having a little bit. I think, you know, like how the writers, we talk about the writers are so excited to keep adding in more and more characters. I think the DP is going, oh, here's one where I can do a little illusion of what's coming.
Yeah, subtlety is not exactly their strong suit.
I'm not complaining, but you're right. It is not subtle at all.
If you choose to look at it from you know, a lighthearted point of view, it's amusing because you crack yourself up. But at the same time, when you're trying to watch it as a somewhat serious TV show, which it's supposed to be, it's like...
Somewhat, yes.
Yeah, I saw what you did there. You're so mature.
I have a feeling if I was on the set there, I would just be giggling at a lot of the crew. So we go back to the commissioner, Peter Scolari, who I have never thought of as this deep, dark, evil guy. I remember him as Henry way back on Bosom Buddies, and if you haven't seen that, him and Tom Hanks in cross-dressing in the early 80s, late 70s, it's hilarious. I like seeing him, though, dark, because he doesn't seem to be backing down at all from Jim. Mm. At all. I mean, he's ready to go toe-to-toe. He's got such certainty, which I think plays into a line. I love the line he said, I do enjoy unwavering certainty when unwavering certainty is undermined by the truth.
Yes. Oh my God. That was such an amazing line.
Yeah. So let me say that one again because I messed it up. I do enjoy when unwavering certainty is undermined by the truth. It was such a great line for this show.
It was amazing. They have a lot of good lines, but I don't know about you. Me, they rarely catch, you know, they rarely take my breath away. Mm-hmm. But this one, he said that, and I was like, oh my God, a good juicy bit is coming up. I can't miss it. Do not blink.
Exactly. Don't blink. Make sure you can rewind if you have to and all that. And then we see that it's Harv. Oh, wait, sorry. Bullock is the one that's presenting the evidence to get him off. My heart dropped. This was like when Butch does something against Fish. I'm like, no, Harvey. Bullock.
Yeah, it was
sorry. Don't do that.
What did you do? What did you do? Think about your life. Think about your choices. Time out.
But he did. I see. Here's the other line that I really like, and I don't like most of their titles, their episode titles, at all on the show, which is one reason I started renaming them, and at least trying to have fun with them. This episode I like because when Harvey says, "My cobble pot didn't come back," it gives you an entire idea of, you know, a Cobblepot now becomes not just a character, it becomes this thing that we have. It's this dirty, dark secret that if it, when it comes back, it can actually give you redemption and gives you that second chance. And he's saying, my Cobblepot didn't come back. It's still this dark secret that's held over me. And I'm choosing life over death. And so I thought that was such a great, I mean, I was so upset with Bullock, and then he says that, and I'm like, oh, I get it. I'm so sorry. You need a Cobblepot.
No, when he said, everybody has a Cobblepot, I was like, okay, I like this, because I remember when we were recording last week, and it was like, next week, everybody has a Cobblepot, and we were like, oh my god, it's going to be all about the Penguin.
Yeah.
And
when the description didn't talk about Penguin at all, and we're like, oh god, it's going to be one of those kind of episodes again. And like I said, Cobblepot is not him. It's an idea now.
It's a thing.
It's a thing.
It blew me away because this episode had those tiny little moments of brilliance that both had me incredibly excited and had me incredibly impressed by what the writers were capable of. But they were paired with long moments of mediocrity. You know?
Yeah. I can see that.
It was like, but you give me everybody has a Cobblepot. You give me all these incredible things, and then you why do I even get myself worked up about this? I mean, it's been months. I should be used to it.
This whole thing, I get the shock value of it. The one thing I wrote was, come on, Bullock, you're his partner. You could have given him, or at least attempted to give Jim, some kind of heads up.
Yeah.
By the way, something bad happened. You know, instead of him learning about it with Essen and Dent and all this. It's like, give him some kind of heads up. You guys are supposed to be buddies. But then I think the fact that the writers did bring it around to how my Cobblepot didn't come back, and that opens up this whole other kind of aspect of everybody's story. Because like he says, half of the cops in the GCPD have a Cobblepot.
Yeah.
You know, Loeb's got stuff on all of them. Making it that thing, I'm like, okay, writers, you are having some potential here of what you can do and what you can write about and how everything doesn't have to be right here in front of my face. Like, you don't have to shove everything right in front of my face for me to get it, that you can do these deeper ideas.
Yeah.
Please see that for episodes 19 through 22 and season 2. Latch on to these kind of moments, because that was a really good moment.
Oh, it was such a But, alas, still, I'm trying to be positive.
Well, and like you said, though, it did also set up why Jim now, he doesn't totally distrust Bullock, but enough where I can't partner with you right now for this. You know, that's why he goes to Dent, and Dent even says, you know, hey, Loeb's got nothing on me. Yeah, that always makes me even more suspicious when somebody is as squeaky clean as Dent is presenting himself.
Especially in Gotham. I mean, this is Gotham we were talking about. Before Jim came to GCPD, there were almost no honest cops, apart from kidnapped Montoya and Allen, who have to be kidnapped for them not to be around. You know, maybe.
I think they went on vacation. I think Falcone.
Yeah. Probably.
Gave him a vacation around the world or something.
Yeah. But, you know, before Jim, there were no honest people in this town.
No.
And yet Harvey Dent managed to become assistant district attorney, or whatever. Is he ADA? Or is he just prosecutor? I'm pretty sure he's ADA. Yeah.
I think he's an ADA, yeah. I don't know, it's been a while since we've seen him, so, you know, I was kind of forgetting about him.
Yeah, so basically, He's important. Important enough to matter to people like, you know, Lovecraft. Whatever. Mm-hmm.
Who? Sorry.
Exactly. So, you know, it's slightly suspicious that he's completely clean, that the commissioner doesn't have anything on him. So.
Exactly.
But, you know, he's pretty, and we forgive pretty people a lot.
There's a lot of pretty people on the show.
Yeah.
I think it did at least set up a good reason why Jim was with Dent as opposed to Bullock. And I think Dent also, the way they've set him up, is really even more golly gee to Williker, at least on his happy side, his happy face, is so squeaky clean. I mean, even more so than I think Jim was when he first came on. That it's bringing out that side of Jim. I was like, really, Jim, when they were interrogating that one guy that had been Loeb's former partner, and he just does that whole, I don't know what you're talking about, but if I did, I'd say, talk to Shi Lu. And I'm like, you're really going to buy this? You're really going to buy this? That this guy, because he said, but if I did know what you're talking about, I'd say this. Bullock so would have seen through that, and thankfully did. Jim, do not switch Harveys. Do not switch Harveys. Stick with your Harvey.
It was just... No, they were... I felt like Jim was all over the place in this episode. I mean, all within one episode, he was gullible. Come on, who would buy this?
That was very gullible.
My 7-year-old
he was the big brother.
Buy this. But
yeah, he was a big brother to Bruce.
Yeah.
The uncle.
He was this, you know, slightly naive guy who once again made a deal with Penguin.
He's very cold.
And then you get this cold, calculating guy who showed absolutely no remorse of strongholding the commissioner into things and using this incredibly disturbed girl or a woman, young woman, to get his way. And I'm just like, okay, Jim, I feel like you've been given a lobotomy and you're not the character that you were in the last episode. And what is going on? I was confused by Jim, really. I liked moments of him, and there were some really good stuff, but most of all, it was you know, confusion, because, huh?
I don't think they've really figured out Jim as well as they did Bullock, because I think when you saw Jim and Dent walking out, and Bullock has this look, it was a little hurt puppy look, I have to admit. I've seen that. Like, you know, why can't I come and play with the guys? But he also knows. He really is in on it. He just keeps needing to have that tie that keeps him to the good side.
Yeah.
The fact that he's the one, you know, when Jim and Dent, stupid idiots that they are, go downstairs into this pit, you know, where there's all these bookies and things, and they think, you know, golly gee, our badge is, and our gun is going to help. I love that it was, run! You know? I instantly thought Monty Python, run away, run away! That when they're stuck, which this is also a metaphorical thing, when they are trapped with no possible exit and they are about to be killed, who comes barreling through the fence but Bullock, his trusted partner who didn't have a cobble pot, but he's still out there watching your back, Jim. It's like, don't get rid of him quite so fast. But Bullock is still staying true to himself, the way he was, you know, getting the information out of that guy. Oh, I'm going to give props right there to the stunt people, because that just made me cringe. I'm like, oh, the head is so close to the ground. I know it's camera tricks, but it's making me uncomfortable.
Me too. I was almost watching it through my fingers. I mean, I'm used to violence and everything, but every once in a while, there are moments that made me cringe and are my so-called squeaks. Like, last week when Fish stepped on her eye, I was watching it with my eyes closed, almost like, oh, I don't want to see this. And now Bullock's interrogation technique left me slightly disturbed. And, you know, ew. Yeah, I don't want to see this.
But I think it was very consistent with what Bullock grew up through. It was very consistent with his character. It's not something out of the blue. He's been in this gritty life where it was really hard to tell the cops from the mobsters. This is a very mobster thing, and it made total sense.
Yeah, but it's emphasizing the problem where the writers don't have any problems of keeping the sidekicks and the side characters consistent, while not knowing what they want to achieve with their main hero.
Exactly. That's a good point.
It's like they are adjusting the way Jim is acting to what they want out of the plot. And it was especially obvious in this episode. Like, we want this to happen, so we're going to have Jim do this, even though it's slightly out of character and Jim doesn't do stuff like that. I half expected it to be Bullock in that room with the commissioner, striking that deal. Because that would be something Bullock would have no qualms to do. But to see Jim do this, and right after he was so freaked out, you know, at what Penguin's guy did to that cop, to get what Jim needed. It was like...
Oh yeah, from several episodes ago.
Yeah, and it left Jim freaked out. He's not ready to be a player in this brutal game. He's not ready for that. And yet, apparently, somebody in the writer's room decided, yeah, it's going to be awesome. We don't care, it's out of character. Let's get him do this.
I wonder what it is, not saying that you don't want to get a cop that you know murdered somebody, that Floss guy. Not saying that you don't want to get him off, but what is it that pushed Jim so far over the edge that, like you said, how he did not want to deal with Penguin before. He felt dirty. This isn't going to happen again. I should never have come to Penguin for that help before. And now he's like, well, we need to talk to someone who will talk, that's in Falcone's thing. And Bullock is like, are you sure about this? Because remember, you know, I almost feel like Bullock is us going, remember a few episodes ago when you didn't like the fact that we went to Penguin? Now you're fine going to him. And he actually conceded quite a lot in that whole talk with Penguin about the deal. I'll owe you a favor. No questions asked.
And come on, let's be honest here. If Harvey Bullock is the voice of reason...
Something's wrong.
Are you sure you want to go there? Like,
I mean, if he's buying the drinks...
Yeah.
If he's buying the drinks, go right ahead. I trust you, Harv. You get some really great drinks. But, yeah, when he's the voice of reason on ethics and things...
Yeah, on ethics, especially. It was like a Twilight Zone.
It was. Penguin was enjoying it quite nicely there. A good deal there. 5 minutes with the files and a favor. No questions asked. Done. I think Jim should have been very suspicious about that, too. The fact that Penguin was so happy. To me, no, the 5 minutes with the files, that is your favor. Go for it. Have fun.
Yeah, I would stay on that. You can either have a favor, no questions asked, or 5 minutes with the files.
Uh-huh.
Come on. It's huge. Those files are make it or break it. For, like, the most powerful people in the city. And you want something on top of that? Excuse you. Nah, just So yeah, this was the most meh part of it.
Well, we're getting into that part that for me was kind of like the whole going out to that house. You have this sweet old couple. Never trust a sweet old couple, that seems. I'm having flashes to Orphan Black last season with, yes, they'll protect us and keep us warm, and there's a noise upstairs, and I'm like, oh, you guys are stupid if you think everything's honky-dory and that they're giving you... Yeah. I was waiting for, like, arsenic in the tea or something.
I know, me too!
This whole... Really, there's something. Drug it, something. Although, you know, seeing Marge wielding that shotgun. You go, girl. Let's not do any puny little weapons there. Let's go for the big guns. Quite yeah. literally. What did you think about that whole thing?
The moment Marge I saw the elderly couple, I was like, guys, run. Not only it's the sweet elderly couple in the middle of nowhere, guarding one of the biggest secrets of the guy you're taking on, but it's an elderly couple in the middle of nowhere that's supposed to be guarding
at night.
A big secret. Either A, there is no secret because no one in their right mind would, you know, entrust huge file room into the hands of two elderly people who could be killed, like, instantly. Or they are so twisted that you do not want to mess with them. So either way, you do not want to be in that house.
Yeah.
And they were, like, sitting at the table and chatting and taking the, oh, it's just a noise, it's the old... Were you
Squirrels.
Born yesterday?
Whatever, yeah.
Were you born yesterday? What is
this really scene had so much of a flashback to when Jim and Dent went down into Shilu's lair there. I'm like, this is the second time in this episode that you've been led into a trap. It's a trap, to quote Princess Leia. It's a trap. It just reeks of it, too. And, yeah. I don't know how I felt about the whole daughter in the attic kind of thing, that she's the one that actually killed her mom. Spoiler alert if you haven't seen the episode, but you've already been spoiled if you're this far into our episode. biggest one. Really? You're going to leave Penguin in charge of guarding this old couple? Penguin? He doesn't even know how to pour a drink without hurting himself. Come on. Let's not put a weapon in his hand. And then we have other things that happen. But I don't know about the whole crazy daughter thing who likes crushing the heads of starlings. And yeah.
No, come on. At one point, like maybe 10 years ago when I didn't have such an experience with watching TV and storytelling, I would have considered this a good plot. You know, plot twist and then a gasp-worthy moment. But right now, with all the TV shows and episodes and movies that I've watched over the years, it's barely a blip on my radar. It's like...
Yeah. The only two moments I really kind of liked were... I have to admit, I love the look on Penguin's face when Miriam sees him and says, he looks like a bird. And with what we know about like what she likes to do with birds, I was almost like, run, Penguin, run! And it was a small, small little thing there with that one. And then I like the reveal that Penguin didn't get, you know, upper-handed by these couples, that he let them go, that he was having a plan, that he was setting things up. I'm like, oh, this is the Penguin I've been waiting to have come back. You're on your way to earning your thee again. That was a moment I liked.
The one thing I liked was the actress who played the daughter. I know her.
Nicole Tom.
Yeah. She was really good. She went from slightly unstable to slightly creepy to a lot of creepy.
To a lot creepy.
Yeah, to
a lot creepy. Come on.
She went through all those phases really nicely. I like the transitions that she did, and I like the slight changes in her face, in her tone, in the way she played with the necklace. She did creepy and unstable really well. So, if only to have her on my screen, I am willing to, you know, not rant about this plotline that much, because she was really good and I enjoyed her. So, yeah. But other than that, it was like, really, you just wasted so much time on plot twists that were ridiculous and unbelievable and made me yell at my screen. Thank God I didn't have popcorn like I do when I go to the theater, because I would be throwing that popcorn at the screen like it was 50 Shades of Grey.
Fun little side note, she was in Masters of Sex, as was Nicholas D'Augusto, our Harvey Dent, so we're having Masters of Sex crossing over into Gotham.
Yeah, let's not be creepy, Heather. Let's not be creepy. I cannot imagine those two characters in anything that has sex in a sentence. So, no.
Oh, watch the show and you'll understand Nicholas D'Augusto.
I have Googled. The other aspect... understand Nicholas D'Augusto. I just don't want to associate him and the unstable, murderous, no longer teenager with anything that's connected to sex. That's not my king.
We'll go back to her being the good daughter that yes. Loeb thinks. So all of this was really just a ploy to get Jim to be cold and use leverage over somebody else to get what he wants in not having Floss be the president of the police union, but for him to be the president and hit, set him up on his way to eventually being commissioner.
Yes.
Yeah, and taking Loeb's job.
That's another
thing. I don't know how I like that. I don't know how I like that.
I know I don't. Because ever since I started watching Batman and Commissioner Gordon or Captain Gordon or Detective Gordon, whoever.
Gordon. Yeah.
Jim Gordon, whoever is playing him, I got used to the idea that he can be trusted. And that he got to where he ended up in Batman movies by being good at his job.
Right.
And to know that he started by doing something that's ethically and morally questionable doesn't give me confidence in how his career is going to progress. Because if right. this first step was something he didn't deserve, because he didn't. If you have to force your way into something, you don't deserve it. Then what's to say he is going to deserve every single promotion that's going to come after that? It's just, it's like setting him up to fail morally, basically, because I feel like it's cheating. And Jim Gordon shouldn't cheat, because he's the good guy. He's the only honest cop in the town. Trademark. So, Heather, make them fix it.
I don't know that, because he is stooping to everybody else's level. You know, he's another one of the cops that uses this. I love that he returns, that he does make sure and get Harvey's file, Bullock's file. At least we've cleaned the slate so Bullock doesn't feel he has, you know, this, his cobblepot did come back. He doesn't have this whole hanging over him anymore. But now Jim does. It's like Harvey's gotten redemption. And Jim is going down a path that, I don't know, I don't know that I like it. I don't like how much he's reveling in it when we saw how uncomfortable he was just a few episodes ago. I think you're right, they just don't know how to get Jim exactly where they want him to eventually be with where they have him now. So let's have him do weird things.
Yeah, and come on, tell me, what's wrong with Jim getting where he's supposed to get slowly. Like, I don't need him to have any kind of promotion by the end of season one. He's still learning. He is, you know, he has this whole department to clean up, and he can do it honestly. I don't understand why the writers feel the need to turn him into some sort of dark anti-hero. He's Jim Gordon. He's supposed to be, you know, knight in the shining armor, the good guy, and not somebody we have to convince ourselves to like. I want my Jim Gordon to sport righteous indignation again. But he's not going to. Just make it better. Heather, fix this.
Okay, well, I will fix it by saying, let's move on and talk about Fish.
Yes, finally.
Does that fix it? Does that fix it a little bit?
Yes.
Does that make things a little bit better? It might not start out so better, because I'm going to start with my mini rant. Okay, so we had Alfred at the beginning. The next morning, he's up and talking, even though he's been stabbed in the abdomen. No big deal. Okay, well, I kind of set that aside when I saw how hard it was for him to get up out of bed, you know, get back in, and then he's passed out when Kat comes by. Okay, so Alfred just wants to be Superman and then realizes he's in the wrong comic. Fish took a spoon and scooped her eye out. She didn't really gouge it. She scooped it out of her eye socket and squashed it. And yet she wakes up, they do say, the next morning with the eye patch on. Okay, so they've just fixed it. They've cleaned her up. I'm fine with that. When we get to the part where he says he couldn't match the eye color, and she goes over, and I know I'm skipping some things that we are going to talk about, but I have to get my rant out first. And she goes over to the mirror and pulls the eye patch off. And it's, yeah, it's red around there, but there's a blue eye there that she can see out of no problem. I'm like, do you know how much medical trauma she would be in and how long it would take for her to adjust? Okay. There's my little technical medical rant.
My humorous.
They heal so fast in Gotham. I need to go to Gotham and get rid of this cold. I really do.
Cause... My humorous response to this is, Heather, are you trying to tell Fish what she can or cannot do? Do you remember
how people
end up?
I just got lost into it. She's John Locke. Don't tell her what she can't do. Sorry.
Do you remember what happened to the last person who tried to tell Fish what she can or cannot do?
Still, it was my technical. If they had just said, you know, like, how long have you been out? Oh, about a week. If we'd had some time passage with Fish, I would have. But next morning, come on, please. Please. And especially with something that we're going to see later with his own little Frankenstein monster.
Yeah, but if the doctor is capable of performing a complex eye implant and then transplanting, I don't even know what that was, and making it work.
It was something from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah,
he's remind me of Nightmare Before Christmas.
He knows what he does, so, you know, just go with it. Just go with it. Out of all the unbelievable things in this episode, you can let Fish go.
You know, I said that's why I wanted to get past it, because I had to go into my technical rant. And let's move on. So
yes,
we now have Fish.
Move on to my rant before we get to Fish. Because I have one bone to pick with Gotham. Yet another one. Because that's
only one.
No, come on. We finally see Dr. Dolmocker, or whatever, a guy we clearly know is the Dollmaker. And there goes my wish for continuity, because he's too old to make it believable that he's the same person that we saw last year on Arrow. He has a different area of interest, so to speak, than the guy we saw last year on Arrow. So clearly he's not the same guy that we saw in Arrow. And there goes my wish list. That they would somehow keep it open for crossovers. There goes my hopeful little ship. It sails away, and I wave it as it passes me by.
Hey, if he's that good of a doctor, maybe he will perform a new face surgery on himself, and he can make himself into anything.
Yeah, no, I'm giving up on any wishes of continuity between shows that aren't on the same network. That's my final decision, and it's a painful one. But I'll have Fish with her wonderful, brilliant blue eye to comfort me, because she is up to no good.
Can I tell you, I'm disappointed that we're not going to have some fancy little eye patches like we thought. We thought we were going to have pirate Fish.
I know, but at the same time, I think I enjoy Fish with eyes of different colors.
Yeah. A little, you know, a blinged out eye patch would have been cool for an episode. But she doesn't have time for that because, you know, you've had me as your enemy. Wouldn't you rather have me as a friend? Make me your right hand. I'm not joking. Ha ha ha. Right hand. Make me your right hand. Be careful what you're asking for, because he could literally make you his right hand. So Fish is angling for a job in his organization.
Well, I still think she's working towards getting off the island.
But she doesn't know it's an island yet.
Yeah, but she still wants to get out. And so I know where she's going with this. And I keep wondering how long it'll be before the people in the basement. We now know it's not a dungeon or a prison. It's a basement. I wonder how long it's going to take them to lose their faith in Fish. Because we've seen some dissent already.
And now but she has been gone, you know, a whole 12 hours or so.
I know, but now that the Butch imposter is going to die, rightfully so, I don't know if she's going to have that many allies down there. Unless she really does start to, you know, show that she's still working.
The thing is, though, as far as they're concerned, what she said, since you're jumping all the way to the end,
yeah.
What she said is absolutely true. She said not all of us are going to get out of their lives. She said that this is, you know, what was going to happen. If you want to live, he's got to go. I told you this wasn't going to happen. So she's actually being very rational and logical about everything she's doing. I don't think, if I were one of the people down there, yeah, I don't want my number to come up, but she hasn't lied to them. She just hasn't told them all the truth. At all. I mean, you know, she's up there dealing with a Dollmaker. I don't want to call him the Dollmaker yet, which I know in everything else they call him the Dollmaker. And I'm like, first off, you're closer to earning your thee than Penguin is, because Penguin keeps going back and forth. But I still want to keep him more a character and not an uber character, super villain thing yet. So to me, he's still Dr. Dollmaker. But he does bring up the, you know, that kind of interesting thing. When do you stop being you and become something else? You know, when you're doing this, when you've got the new kidneys, okay, but then that woman he gives a new face to, and Fish has this new eye, and doing all these different things. I will say thank you for at least answering my question from last week of, okay, I can see you needing the internal organs and such, but why do you need a leg and an arm? I feel kind of bad for the manager guy, because he's going to have a hard time shopping for clothes with his new body.
Yeah, I don't think he's going anywhere. So I don't think he's going to need any clothes.
He's a toy. He's a toy. But that one was one where I'm like, wow, he messed up really, as far as we know, just once with Fish. And now he's like this. So it's like, Fish?
You might not be want careful. To mess up. Yeah. Play it safe.
You better be careful, because that's... Yeah. That's... Yeah. Scary.
Remember how we hoped that the Fish storyline is going to be amazing. Hey, they did not disappoint.
It's confusing. I'm scared for her. I'm scared for what's happening. I thought she was going to have a new Butch, since she doesn't know that the old Butch doesn't like her so much. And then she sacrifices new Butch.
Good. He didn't deserve to be Butch.
Oh, be nice to him.
It's just his birthday. He doesn't have a cold. I don't have to be nice to him.
You don't know that. It could be his birthday. Is this you being nice to me because I have a cold? Wow. I know. It does set up a very precarious situation, I think, for Fish, because she's got to play the game that she should have been playing back with Falcone and didn't realize what was going on underneath her. She's got to keep all of her people in the dungeon in check, and I hope that she did make a right deal with Dahlmacher to actually get them some of the conditions and foods and things that she said they were.
Yeah.
She's got to figure out something so that they, you know, she doesn't have unrest there, and while still keeping her balance up there with Dahlmacher and everybody else. Because, yeah, she's really walking thin ice on this show.
She right will now. Need all the skills she has to survive.
Yep.
And that's what has me really excited about her storyline. Because Fish is going to rock this. She's going to be awesome. And Jada Pinkett Smith, I love you so much.
Leaving us on that final shot where we see that she's on this Switzerland-y looking island. I mean, this is very Shutter Island kind of feel to it right here. And we're not back for another 6 weeks. That leaves us in such a great place for what could possibly happen in 6 weeks with her. Like you said, we have the problem with the fact that the board isn't going to let Bruce just sit there for 6 weeks while Alfred heals. So something, I don't think we can have a 6 week time passage without some major sense being made. But it would be interesting, actually, I think, for us to come back after 6 weeks and see where Fish is with Dahlmacher.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
I almost would rather see that jump than see a progression. I'd rather see where she left off, seeing the manager, seeing what happened to her dungeon crew and all this, and then let's jump 6 weeks later and see where she's at.
We'll see how they play it. We'll see how they play it. I'm, as usual, you know, I'm skeptical. We'll see.
You never.
I know. Unbelievable. But just this once, we'll see. We will see.
Well, like I said, we have 6 weeks before Gotham comes back. That's April 13th. So you shan't be hearing from Alex and I on Gotham for 6 weeks. We are also thinking about checking out iZombie, since we don't have Sleepy Hollow anymore. And that starts, I think, March 17th, somewhere around there. So you got a week off from us here at Chicks. Miss us. Miss us terribly. Send us candy and flowers and well wishes. Do subscribe to us on iTunes at Sci-Fi for Chicks so that you won't miss any episodes. And we, of course, would always love to hear from you. Like on Twitter, at Sci-Fi for Chicks, you can follow us there. Email sci-fi for chicks@sci-fi for me.com, and the hotline 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. What do you think we got coming here in the final four episodes? We have four episodes before the season finale, before we decide if this is worthy of a season two. Well, what are they going
to
do?
I think Fish is going to at least attempt escape. I don't know if she's going to succeed. I hope she does. But I think she's going to at least attempt it. Or in some capacity, she's going to leave the island. Maybe for Dahlmacher to do something. I don't know, but I think that's where they are going. I don't think they're going to leave Fish hanging, so to speak, with no resolution on that plot. I think Bruce is going to not resolve the problems with the board, but at least learn the rules he needs to know to play this game. To use Fish's metaphor. Maybe he's going to find an ally among Wayne employees. I don't know who. Hopefully something is going to happen. I'm still hoping we're going to see Montoya back at some point in some capacity from, you know, welcome back from exile party or something. I don't know. I miss her, kind of. And if you want to know what I think is going to happen to Jim after this episode, I no longer know. I have no idea where they're going with him and where they want him to end up by the end of season one. What about you?
I have absolutely no idea because the major characters, they have taken in such weird turns. They've set up like Alfred and Bruce to be very precarious, but a cohesive unit. So many characters are just on the fringe. It's like they're just circling. They're electrons circling around this nucleus and really not doing much. And I don't know if Montoya and Alan can come back and actually have anything meaningful. I don't know if Barbara can come back and have anything meaningful. I don't know if all of these supervillains that we've now seen can really have a place in there. To me, it's set up very much that Dahlmacher is going to be a big part. Because he's now entwined with Fish. It's not like Dr. Crane, Scarecrow, being entwined with Jim. Because they're not anymore. Jim's moved on. Fish is really, literally entwined with Dahlmacher. So he has to be big in these last episodes. Yeah. And if he's not, I will be incredibly disappointed.
We'll see.
Because it would be a missed opportunity of a setup, and I think that's what they've had more often than not, is missing the opportunities of the setup.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll see. We will see you back here after Gotham Returns on April 13th. Until then, thank you, Alex, for sitting down and humoring me in my sicky sense. We will see you next time. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is SciFiForMe Radio.